Yeah, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the show, LE2B. I'm Tom McCaffrey. I'm here with Eric B., a little Jason Bourne, I guess, to start out.
Yeah, you know who that was, though? Who is the artist?
Is it Moby?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's a good sign. Don't they play at the end of one of those Jason Bourne movies?
Yeah, I think all of them, maybe. I don't know.
So we're going to get into some stuff, but we have some breaking news. I think we're probably the first show to break it. So,
all right, I'll play the clip and you'll hear Rudy Giuliani was indicted, was accused of sexual harassment. And I think this is his lawyer. Let's hear. Or her lawyer.
He was constantly pressuring her. Making sexual comments, sexual remarks to her, about her, about himself, when they were supposed to be working. He would, as our client alleges, he would then grope her and try to initiate sexual contact.
Attorney Justin Kelton.
Yeah, that was the attorney. The whole thing reminds...
They all have the same move. Just groping? Like, what is this groping thing?
Yeah, and the other thing I'm reading is that they say that he's like always taking Viagra, and he's this is the other thing I heard, he's drunk all the time now. I mean, how the mighty have fallen with that guy, you know? And I think you kind of saw what was going on when that, what was that the movie, the Borat sequel?
Yeah,
Borat. Yeah, and
yeah.
And they got him, and he was taking off his pants or something. You remember that?
I don't know. I mean, it looked like he was like tucking his pants in. I don't. It was like weird. Regardless.
Yeah. But the fact is, he shouldn't just been in there. You know what I mean? I think he should have like left. You know.
Well, so all right. So had there been like rumblings about this before this? I mean, like I know there was the Borat thing, but it's so. I don't know why this took so long. He just looks exactly like someone that would exactly what he just described.
Right.
He looks exactly like that's how he would operate with women. It's like saying, you know, I think these guys, they think that's like flirting. I think they think that's what that is. It's like, oh, you just say some dirty things to them and kind of like that gets them in the mood. And then you just start like grabbing their tit. You know, it's just like.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever worked ever, really, even before Me Too.
So,
but
I guess it would work if like you just kept, if you had a gun, you just kept going. But I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
What is groping basically just kind of against without consent, just touching people?
Yeah, I think that's what that is. And I think a long time ago, people didn't, you could squeeze a girl's ass like Mad Men times. You'd squeeze their secretary's ass and they go, oh, you know,
yeah,
say things like that. Now it's forget it. You lose your job immediately. I also just like to look at really how the mighty have fallen with him. Cause you know, we grew up in New York and, you know, first of all, he took down the mob really himself. Basically he was a big part of that. And in the '90s, you know, I'm Democrat, but he was like a liberal Republican, and he, you know, I think that a lot of the policies that helped turn New York City around with the bad crime started with Dinkins. He just didn't get his second term, but Giuliani did do that. I mean, he made New York feel much safer, you know, and then
yeah,
after that, and then all of a sudden it kind of went too far, and the cops were getting a little too violent, and then people hated him, and he divorced his wife. And then all of a sudden 9/11 happened. And you know what anyone can say, he was, you know, he was the face of 9/11, of the healing.
America's mayor.
Yeah. America's mayor.
Remember
Pataki, the governor? You wouldn't even see that motherfucker.
Yeah, kind of. But he just kind of like disappeared into the background. I mean, Giuliani definitely was one of the prominent players, like
right,
almost even more so than Bush.
Right, Bush, and Pataki was the governor of New York, and he was like, I guess it did happen in the city, but you know, he didn't have the charisma of Giuliani.
I think he just kind of not really get involved with anything beyond like anything in New York City. He was just kind of very, very like upstate New York mayor or governor.
I don't think it's that. I just think that it's hard at the time to kind of go against what Giuliani was. And
so when did it, it is amazing to, and you know, they already have done like two documentaries about it, basically about the fall of Rudy Giuliani. When do you think I watched one of them, and I guess what happened to him is what happens to a lot of these people, is just like, he had become so relevant and probably hadn't been in the spotlight for a while. And, you know, he saw, you know, he knew Trump, I guess, from all those years in New York. And I guess he saw it as his opportunity to become relevant again and have power, because he wanted to be president, but clearly wasn't, but
I think we have to circle back a little bit. I think he was going to run for senator. Remember that? And then that was in 2000, but that's when his popularity was very low because he had just divorced his wife and he would have run against Hillary Clinton. So he decided not to run. Plus, I think he had prostate cancer. That was the reason he gave. Then, but you know, you thought this guy was still going to have some sort of career. I guess the avenue of senator wasn't available. He probably could have run for governor, but I think he wanted just to go right to president. And I think from what I remember, he ran in 2008. And I do give him credit for this because he stayed pro-choice and he was a Republican. And you can't, you just can't, not in that party, not since, you know, the 70s maybe. So, and I heard that was from his wife at the time, the second wife. She was adamant about that. So he's, you know, because, you know, Trump was pro-choice forever. He probably paid for like 20 abortions, this guy.
Yeah.
So Giuliani could have switched in 2008. If he switched that position, he would have had a good chance against McCain. McCain wasn't a super strong candidate. Obviously, you saw what happened with him. I think either one of them would have lost to Obama, but.
Yeah. Was Rudy even in the, I mean, I guess, you know, you're talking about that he was pro-choice, but. Was he ever even in the game, in the running? Like, how close was he during the primaries? Like,
I mean, early on. I mean, he flamed out early on because of that, you know.
Oh, I see.
And that was a big part of it. You know, he was trying to be the old school liberal Republican that you know, I would think that we miss now. We don't have any of those anymore. You know, like a Rockefeller or even George Pataki, people like that.
Yeah.
That party's been co-opted by crazy people.
I mean, they might be around, but they're all like, you know,
there's like two left. One of them
in the basement.
One of them is Susan Collins, who she sucks anyway. She still votes for the Republicans all the time
for everything. I just figure maybe they were just kind of like taken hostage and, you know, had been bound and gagged. I don't know. I mean,
when they overturned Roe versus Wade, Susan Collins was because she voted for Kavanaugh, who is like, I guess, the deciding vote. One of them.
Yeah.
And she's like. He promised me that he wouldn't do that. Like, really? Right. That's you know, he lied to me. Like, what do you think? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then I guess after that is what, you know, after all that shit happened, which would explain why he had kind of such a vendetta probably against Hillary Clinton and Obama. And again, I think what happens is they're such narcissists and they, you know, they spend so much time in the public eye that in getting that attention and validation, they just can't be away from it. He saw it as his opportunity to get close to it. Right. And I think that
they had a relationship already.
And I think it's kind of people underestimate like the allure of power, you know, like if you really get close to that and you're really, it's in, within your grasp and you've had it already. And then it's like, almost his chance to be president or at least be on the cabinet, right? It's just like he's going to do anything he can. I think Trump, I don't know, man, he really, you know, I know it's used hyperbolically about him being a cult leader, but he really is a cult. I mean, he must have some persuasion over people, you know, like,
well, I think
once you get in his grasp, it's just kind of hard to get out from under.
Yeah, I think he just saw his opportunity there. Now, the thing was, when Giuliani came into office as mayor, that same year, they voted a 2-term limit as mayor of New York City. There used to be no term limits. And
I remember Koch was mayor like a long time.
Right. And had they not had that, he could have been mayor for like 10 more years. He was very popular in New York. And in fact, when Bloomberg replaced him, he was termed out for two, but then he just bought off everybody and then he got a third term.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But in fairness, I'm not a big term limit guy. He still had a run in an election. He just changed the law because it was right after the financial crisis. And he was like, Bloomberg was like, you need me to get us through this whole thing. And he's a billionaire. So he paid off all the right people and they're like, okay, you can run again. He still has to win the election. So. Yeah. You know, I didn't really fault that too much. People were upset, but I'm like, you know, Giuliani just didn't have the juice to do that.
Wait, so what do you, why? First of all, I've been waiting for charges to, you know, come out against Giuliani for a long time now after they indicted Trump. I don't know why that's taking so long, and I don't know why this has been the first one to drop. You know, it seems like the big one. Is this going to matter against? I mean, I guess everyone's kind of turned on him, and if Trump seems fallible now, then he definitely does.
Well, I think that he is always been the low hanging fruit, and they're still looking into his election bullshit and denials and all that other crap because, you know, you put Trump in jail, there's going to be a lot of people who go crazy. That's why I don't think they're going to do it. You put Giuliani in jail, I don't think anyone's going to really be that upset. Some people will be kind of mad, but they don't fucking care. So he's
going to be kind of a bag man, I would think.
He knows how the legal system works. And they said that he was quoted once recently saying, he goes, I just don't want to die in jail. Because, you know, Trump would fucking serve him up on a platter. He don't fucking care.
Hasn't he kind of already? I feel like he already kind of cut ties with him. Now, he hasn't served him up, but he definitely seems to like have backed away from him.
Right. But if they said, hey, listen, we'll keep you out of jail, Trump, just find, show us how Giuliani did something wrong. He'd be like, in 5 seconds, he would do it.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I just saw this and who knows what. It does feel kind of like a throwback, though. I know that there's still things that come out every now and then where there's, you know, people get accused of some sexual thing, but a lot of them don't seem to have traction as much as they did, you know, like 6 years ago.
Right. And, you know, this one will.
I don't know. Maybe.
This is obviously a civil lawsuit, so he's not going to go to jail or anything. Right. This is some of the details. Drank morning, noon, and night and was frequently intoxicated. Took Viagra constantly, would expose himself. Ooh. That he could not work. What did he say?
Took Viagra constantly, just like during in like a regular day to day.
Yeah.
Like he thought he might be having sex at some point.
Always be prepared. Isn't that the Boy Scout model?
I've done it where I've taken it thinking I'm going to, and then like I don't. So it's like, okay. But yeah. I wouldn't just take it on a whim.
Viagra's the new, like, I always thought, like, I never would, you know, like when you were young, you would take a condom out, you know. I always thought that was bad luck because every time I did, nothing would happen. And every time I didn't, of course, something would happen.
Right. No, you're right. That's true. Yeah. I haven't done it like I'm in a relationship. I haven't done it just like on a date, like going out on a date. But right. Yeah, that's true, though. Yeah, it's definitely happened where I'll do that. And then like nothing happens. But it's just kind of funny because it doesn't really give you an erection, right? It just sort of like makes it last if you're doing, or I don't know, it gets easier to or something. Honestly, I don't even know if I need it. I just kind of like have it.
Well, that's the thing. You kind of get used to it. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and it's like, it's almost like, because I know a lot of young dudes are taking it, you know? And to be honest, you know, I probably would have done the same thing because, you know, you're out, you're getting drunk.
Yeah.
And when you, especially, I always think when you hook up with a woman for the first time, sometimes you can.
You want to like, yeah.
What? You're nervous.
You're nervous and you want to like kind of make an impression on them. Like, oh my right. God. It's really hard.
So it almost. You get addicted to it almost in a way.
Addicted? Yeah. No, yeah. It's, but it's just funny to think like that he was just drunk all the time taking it just like at work.
Yeah.
I mean, he would need it, I would imagine. But also, it's also, I don't know, it's kind of funny to hear that even at his age and the way he looks, he's still that horny and his libido really is running that rampant. You know what I mean? Does it ever like get easier? I feel like, you know, the whole thing is like when you get older, you were kind of like, okay, my sex drive's going to go down and I'll be able to like function and live a human life. You know what I mean?
Right.
Have you noticed it has, mine definitely has slowed down. I think I got to a point I think this might just been maybe an age thing. I don't know if you experience this where like sex becomes like a lot less important to you.
Oh
like,
yeah.
Older. You're just kind of like, you know, cause I remember it was starting in my thirties, my late thirties. So I was like, you know, I feel like I'd rather just go home than like maybe have sex here and then have to stay here. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I feel like it would just be nice. And then I would have nights of I would go home and like be alone in bed after a day and be like, oh, this is great. So I don't think it's you don't want it anymore, but you know what I mean? It's just like it's prioritized more.
Right.
You know
sometimes you make that calculation, you're like, this could happen, but I know how much work I got to put into this just to get it to happen. That you're like, I would just rather jerk off and go to sleep.
Right, right. You're right. Like when you mean when you see ahead of you the whole night, that right. you have to kind of hang out. Like this is going to be a 3.5 hours. That's why it's better when like it just kind of happens organically. You're right. Even if you're hanging out, it just kind of happens. And it's the best way to the attitude that I found later on to have was you're not attached to that goal of like, right. oh, I have to have, you know, and that's usually because women can pick up on vibes like that, you know, oh, like yeah. the desperation. So
yeah. You act like
I don't know. Give a
fuck. Almost when you get older, it almost works better because you actually don't give a fuck.
I think that's what it is. They can like oddly sense when you really are, when you really don't give a fuck and when you're just pretending to not give. Because I feel like I pretended to not give a fuck for a long time and it didn't really work. But the times I really did it were the times that, you know, usually things worked out because usually it's like anything. You're like loose and, you know, I don't know. It's like women are very intuitive. They can tell. And also like women, it's like everyone's hitting on them all the time. So it's like they see things that not everyone can see. You know what I mean? Do you know, like,
yeah. Well, I just want to say you're a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
There's just one more thing. This is the other allegation. You tell me if this is sexual harassment, okay?
Okay.
Ready? All right. Giuliani made clear that satisfying his sexual demands, which came virtually at any time, anywhere, was an absolute requirement of her employment.
I think we covered that in law school in sexual harassment 101. I think that's like the very definition of that. It's like your job is contingent on him having sex with you whatever he wants. And someone took that job, was like, yeah, all right. And like, yeah, I'm good. I'd rather just go hungry and let my family starve to death. And so that was really a thing he said to this woman?
That's what his lawyer is alleging. Her lawyer is alleging.
What do you think? I mean, come on. I just assume it's totally true because he just looks disgusting and he looks like that would be his tactic to get women. I wonder the thing about the whole thing with like people are like, what happened to him as a legacy? The whole thing that came out later is people were like, oh, he was always like that. He was always a shit. He was just better at hiding it before. And he put on a public face and he knew he had to say things because he was, you know, he's a politician. But something happened with Trump where I don't know. It must be a thing you get to a certain age and you just don't give a shit. And you're like, he was probably like, fuck it, man. Like, I'm getting old. Like, this is it for me. Like, right. I want like a powerful position. I want, and Trump probably promised him a lot of, you know, money. First of all, didn't Trump like not even ever pay him? Like, these people keep working from his lawyers. Like, he never pays anyone.
Yeah, but you know, the exposure that Giuliani probably got over the last few years probably got him a lot of money in other places, being just a Trump, you know, talking. You know, like, it's like Kellyanne Conway. Yeah. But I think one of the first times that I ever remember Giuliani really noticing he was a dick is, and it was like in the mid 90s, and New York came back and the crime was really down, and a lot of it had to do with the police commissioner that he appointed, William Bratton, who's been a police commissioner in a few cities. He's pretty good, and there was a Time magazine and they put Bratton on the cover and not Giuliani, and I think soon after Bratton was forced out because Giuliani didn't want to share the credit or wanted all the credit. And I remember that was the first time like, all right, come on. I mean, you picked the guy, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. And the other thing I feel like him going to jail is like the only real end that we can have in this, because it's just been going downhill for so long. It's just like, where's it going to? And the fact that he said that, or he's alleged to have said that, kind of shows that he must be aware. Because that's what's so odd is, like, he seems so detached from reality, but there must be a part of them that really deep down has a. I don't know. It is weird because, you know, he's a lawyer, he knows the law. Didn't he get disbarred for the whole fucking?
Yeah, and it's weird because he really. I mean, he made his mark taking down the mob, and I always thought he was the prosecutor. Or what was the DA or something, whatever it was. And I think the reason why they picked him is he was Italian, and you know, they wouldn't want to make it seem like it was an anti-Italian thing. So the way to do it is you have an Italian prosecutor. That's how that stuff works. So I think that's one of the reasons why he picked him. You know, and he had like hits on him too. Like, these mob guys had
Was
hits.
He the guy who took down like Gotti?
he took down the five, the heads of the five families, not Castellano because he was murdered by Gotti, but at least four or five of them. He arrested all of them. And I watched this documentary about it. He was in it and he was like, you know, he's very eloquent and he was talking about it. And he said that so much of the information that they got, you know what it came from? You know, because they started using RICO, which you know what that is. I still don't,
yeah,
you know.
The racketeering.
Right. That's how they used it. But they said a lot of the stuff, the information they got from the mob was from guess who?
Trump. No, I'm kidding.
Was a movie.
They got from the...
It was a movie.
Henry Hill?
No. Movie in the late 90s. Not Goodfellas, but pretty damn good.
Oh, Donnie Brasco? Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That guy?
Yeah.
That cop who was undercover?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what year was that he was undercover?
I don't know. I would
say
the 80s? Probably the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, this Donnie Brasco guy, Kink, got so inside, they almost made him. And that's when they pulled him out. And Donnie Brasco told the FBI, he's like, if they make me, they'll be so embarrassed. And it was the one crime family that he infiltrated. I forgot which one it was that... They got so fucked up from it. But then for some reason, I guess the head of the family wasn't arrested by Giuliani. So later on, they got strong. So it was kind of a weird situation, the whole thing. But apparently Giuliani said that he said in an interview, he's like, they got a lot of information out of him.
It's really funny, like in retrospect, you know, these mob things when the guy infiltrates the cop and they're always like, it just seems so obvious that the guy is a cop, you know? You were right. Like, no. I don't know. Someone's been spreading, you know, information to the police. And you I've only known you for 10 days.
Right. That was
that other guy.
Yeah, that was the funny. I think even The Simpsons made fun of it. The Departed.
Departed. It's so clearly him.
Yeah. It's like, what's going on? All this info's coming out. No, is it? The guy who was here for 3 days. Nah, that can't be him. Can't be
right.
him.
No, you know what? It's the guy that we've known for 10 years. It's like he might as well have been wearing a police uniform
right.
when he was undercover. Like, is it you? No.
But Donnie Brasco.
I would be so bad at that, like being undercover. Like, come on, man. Are you a rat? No.
I mean, yes. I mean, no.
Fuck. Yeah, that must be terrifying. Who would want to ever do that?
No, but apparently Donnie Brasco, I read about it, that guy, he did it. It took him years. Like, it wasn't like he had years to get the trust of all these people. And he learned all the lingo and he learned everything. And so it wasn't like overnight. He had to really learn.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. But I think it's funny that
it is scary, though.
And then, I don't know. I guess the whole one of the big aspects of that whole world is you can't trust anybody. So if you're always, your guard's always up for everyone. It always ends up with the mob. They go down from like their closest friend and then, you know, turns them in, or they murder their closest friend, you know, cause they're always surprised. Like, I can't believe they were going to send him. He was my closest friend. It's like, isn't that always how it is? Like that your best friend murders you in the mob.
Yeah, I was, you know, in those mob movies and TV shows and docs, they always talk about how a lot of them were scared to deal drugs, but they eventually got into it. But the problem was they had these drug laws that were so tough that you got nabbed with drugs, you're not doing a year, you're doing fucking 20, 30 years. And those are the people that are easy to flip. So that's why if you see the movie Goodfellas, he doesn't really want them to deal drugs because he knows if they get nabbed, they're going to get a big sentence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's why at one point when Henry is dealing blow on the side or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Paul Sorvino.
He gets mad. Paul Sorvino. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I just want to quickly talk about. So do you watch Succession? You don't watch Succession?
I mean, I've watched some of it, but you go ahead. Tell me, because I everyone says it's a great show. Just every time I watch it, people just looking at their phones and talking the whole time. But I know it's a good show.
Well, I mean, you know, it is good, but it's like it's very slow and it can be really kind of hard to follow. I mean, it's just I understand it because it's kind of like, you know, elevated TV, very prestige drama. And I think it's mm-hmm. like. It's like very adult, you know, and you kind of you have to really know it. It almost feels like being into it feels like you're kind of in a club that not everyone can be in. Like you have to like put in work to know it. So, and it's not like the it's it's a little bit challenging.
Now, I know
the
patriarch died, right? Brian Cox, I heard that. Spoiler alert, who cares? I don't give a fuck. Someone told me that, right? He died.
He died. Yeah, right. He died like three episodes ago.
Right. So now there's like, is there like a feud to see who's going to take over?
Well, that's what's going on. And right. like, so the last night's episode, first of all, there's only like two more episodes left. And this is it. This is the final season. And they've been this whole season, maybe even last season, they've been building up like in the background because it's like based on the Murdochs. You know that, right?
Of course.
And like,
yeah.
And they own a news channel, cable news channel called ATN. It's supposed to be Fox. But one thing that was amazing last night is it was election night. It was presidential election mm-hmm. night. And it was all took place on election night behind the scenes in the like ATN offices. And basically they've never really do this blatantly. It was just kind of it was very parallel to the 2016 Trump election,
right?
Because it's supposed to be this guy, there's this kind of ultra right wing, you know, demagogue who's running, and everyone's like, he doesn't have a chance. And yeah. then the liberal out of the Democrat is favored, and then it gets behind the scenes of calling states. There's like someone like vandalizes like a voting center where there's a bunch of like absentee okay. ballots and like burns like 200,000. This yeah. one is really I watched the show and I like, but this was one where I was like, oh my god, like it was really no, it's almost it. Like going back to the very moment of like what started all this, because it's like they decide to call a state for the demagogue, even mm-hmm. though he hasn't officially won it.
Yeah.
And no one else is calling it, but they're like, we're going to call it. And they're basically like, this is going to be the election. And we're just going to say he won the election.
Right.
And it's all about like behind the scenes. One of them is like, you can't do that. This guy is like dangerous. And I had never seen them like that blatantly mirror what has happened. But it was really interesting too, because it's not exactly the same thing as what's happened in that universe, but they definitely did it in a very parallel way where it was very reminiscent of 2016. And it's what's more horrifying is knowing everything that happened after it. And it's right. basically, and it's interesting too, because you know, you're watching it and you forget it. It's kind of like, remember the Sopranos, like you kind of, everyone started liking the characters and then they would all of a sudden do something horrible. And yeah. they would kind of remind you like, oh, these are like horrible people that right. you're like elevating and worshiping. So they did that last night where it was kind of like these characters you've been following for years and they're, you know, they're assholes, but they're kind of funny. They're making these choices that are like destroying the world and, right. and they know it. And you're like, oh my God, like I like this guy was always really funny, but I think he's a horror. Now you're kind of like putting it back on you, on the audience a little bit, which is mm-hmm. always an interesting.
Well, I think
that's why I think people like it, but
and
it seemed like a lot of time for a big payoff, but yeah.
I think Murdoch in real life doesn't like Trump, but he's trying to move on. But, you know, the party's not letting Fox do that. And I always thought in 2016, yeah, they piped him up. Yeah, they had to pretend. But I think in the end, they were probably hoping for him to lose, because really Fox, a lot of times the party that's not in power, you know, if one party's in power, that the news station usually does better. It's like when Trump was president, MSNBC did really well because they have something to like get their viewers fired up about. So with Trump, if Hillary won, I think it would have been great for Fox. I mean, he was good for ratings for everybody, Trump, but I think they would have loved to have had a Hillary president for 4 years, Fox. They would have just fucking ripped her to shreds and they would have right. gotten a lot of viewers. So I don't think they really cared. So I think they were almost probably rooting for him to lose. The second time, they were stuck, you know, they wanted yeah. to move on. But as you see in that deposition, all that, they couldn't
cut ties. This one, it's interesting because they are showing that behind the scenes, a lot of them are just like, well, we can't do this, you know, because, yeah. you know, and then one of them is just basically like kind of showing the detachment, because, you know, when you break it down, I mean, there are these people are just these multi every privilege and they don't live in the world that anyone else lives in. And for them, they're just kind of pulling strings and like and doing things and they don't even know the reality of who it's, you know, the whole thing, it's going to destroy the world. And, you know, so many people and they're just like, well, whatever. I don't really like that doesn't really affect me. I don't really see I take helicopters everywhere. Right. So it's not really. So when you look at it from it was just kind of terrifying because you're kind of like you know, the people who write this, like they're talking to consultants from like cable news and from campaigns, like mm-hmm. people worked on like the Bush campaign and were on the floor for a lot of these, like, you know, the 2000 recounts, stuff like that, and like calling the election. Like this kind of shit's really happening. That's what's so.
Well, the weird thing like, is that I read this article about Succession that they seem to be able to predict a lot of things that actually happen on Fox. They've been over the years, and they're saying either the writers are getting really lucky or someone from Fox is giving them storylines.
I wonder,
people leak shit all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty. And the other thing with this is, I mean, first of all, the show's going to be over soon, but it's also starting the narrative of like, this is the choice that's going to just because the since the main Murdoch guy is dead mm-hmm. and he was like he wanted the demagogue, he like supported him, but at the end of the day he didn't really like him and he knew he'd be bad for the country, so it's kind of like he's gone, like that somewhat rational voice is gone, and the sons are just these power hungry brats who are just kind of like, well, this guy, it all comes down to like a merger deal that they don't want to happen, and the demagogue has promised if you call it for me, I'll stop the deal. So it's basically like all this shit comes down to just like these corporate interests of like, yeah. you know, we don't want this deal, so like this is gonna be, and also they look at him and they're like, you know, he's totally saying like espousing all this like hateful rhetoric and like Nazi ideology, and they're just like they're like, we can work with this guy. You know, kind of like they know that it's horrible for the country, but at the same time, they're like, this is really. And then he says at the end something like, look, all we did was like create a great night of television. That's all it is. And one of them's like, no, I don't think that's all this. Kind of showing the beginnings of like mm-hmm. how it's, you know, these guys are just kind of making these decisions that they don't think like, oh, whatever, we'll just say this weird thing, whatever. And then it's like, no, you're basically destroying the country.
I know it's CNN has fallen. We talked about it last week where they had that town hall and.
Did you watch that?
Yeah, it was they're so desperate for ratings, and they got really good ratings that night. Not amazing, not as well good as the Biden had a town hall that did better, but it was for one night. CNN did really well, and then the right. ratings were bad after that. So what did they really get out of that?
That's why it was so funny that Succession was on right after that, because it was basically the exact same sentiment. That's basically what they were saying. I didn't know CNN did so badly. I mean... Apparently they're just like shit. I didn't know that their ratings were so bad.
Oh yeah, because they you know, they're perceived as liberal, but they don't like to show they don't like to take sides too much. So,
Did we talk about the town hall? I mean, that town.
Yeah, we did.
We did. Okay, mm-hmm. I thought we did it. Okay. Yeah, it was fucking like. It was just terrifying because I was like, oh, we're right back into mm-hmm. 2015. Like, I can't believe like the fact that they're like, hey, here's this guy. He's the front runner. We're just going to bring him out and talk to him. Like, here are his views. We want to know what his views and his policies are. It's like, what do you think his views are?
Right.
Like, you don't know what his plans are. Like,
and he just lied, and she tried to fact check him real time, but he just goes too fast. He was just
too weak. She's just you can't put him against someone who's like, say that's
no, you can't put him against you. Yeah,
you can't put him against any human being,
right? Because he'll keep talking, he'll filibuster, and you can't get words in, and he'll just lie. And it's very hard to fact check everything a person says that comes out of their mouth. That's the problem.
That's so funny. That's where we are now, where it's like you literally remember it used to be, oh, you'd fact check after a bait. Oh, this what they said, this wasn't true. Now it's literally you need a fact checker as they're talking. And then I said this. No, that's not true. No, you didn't. That's not true. But the thing is, like, people thought that was the way to handle it. Like, well, that'll stop. And it doesn't matter. He's just like, no, I did do that. I did right. do that. And then like like, he said, you know, like the tape that everyone's heard a million times where they're like, I need you to get me these many votes. You said, get me this many votes. He's like, I didn't say that. And it's like, I've heard that tape every day for 3 years.
Yeah. Or when he goes, the election was rigged. No, that's proved not. No, he said it. He'll go, everyone says it was rigged. He always says that.
Everyone says it.
Yeah.
Then they're like, well, what's the, you know, there were 60 cases that were, you know, that you lost. Like, no, but this one website said there were government cameras. He just says he talks so much in circles now, you don't even know what he's saying anymore.
I mean, the one thing she could have pinned him down on was abortion, because that's their really weak. And he's like, you know, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to negotiate. And she's like, where do you stand? What's your exact position? He won't answer because he knows it's a fucking loser. And he's like, how many weeks do you think before you can get? He's like, we'll negotiate that. But that's during the election next year. That's when reporters got to pin him down. Forget about what you want, not what we negotiate or what this and that.
Right,
what do you
right.
Start? Do you want a national ban? This, that, the other thing. And they can.
Well, the tactic is he just doesn't answer. He's right. Just like, he doesn't. Well, but it's like and then this was one that I remember being like, oh, I wonder when he finally realized this, like this is how far gone it's gone, where they were like, OK, you said you were going to build the wall. They don't mention that Mexico is going to pay for it anymore. I guess that's just secondary. I don't know why that's not brought up anymore. But they're like, you said you're going to build a wall. You only built 52 miles. And then now, have you noticed, he just says he built the wall. He just goes, I built the wall. And they're like, no, you didn't. He's like, no, I did. And I remember when he did it, I was like, wait, what the hell? And then I was like, this is genius.
Yeah.
Like there is no way to prove he didn't do the wall. Like, what are they going to do? They're going to like have camera footage for like thousands of miles. I was like,
yeah.
I wonder when he realized, like, he probably didn't even, like, I could just say I built it. No
it
one's going to
matter. You could do that. You could check
it.
Him. You could check him real time with a photo.
You could it. Yeah.
No, but it's fake. It's fake. Yeah. So
I remember like, that was a real kind of signal to me. And it was an inflection point where I was like, oh my God, like this, like even 3 years ago, he was like the building the wall. He still couldn't completely defend. He was talking his way around it. And then he realized like, I'll just say I did it. Like, what are they going to do? Like, so that's like everything now. It's just going to be like, you didn't do this. You didn't do that. No, I did do that. Or I didn't do that. And it's just like, well, we have facts, and it's like you want to tell the people, like, if you're going to fact check them, you need to do it a lot more aggressively, and you have to be able to be heard when you're saying it. Right.
I mean, I don't know. He just knows how to. That's why he's going to win the nomination, because these other candidates can't do what he does. They can.
I'd say there's a 60% chance he's going to be president again.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it depends where we are next year, but.
I just feel like
as a nominee, he's definitely a nominee. These guys can't get past him. There's no way. None of these guys.
Who else would there be? You know,
DeSantis? He's not going to get past him.
You know, I think people underestimate. I think Christie could actually go toe to toe with him on stage.
Christie's not running.
You don't think so?
No. He's just putting it out there. If everything falls apart, maybe he'll jump in. Christie's good in that respect, where he can kind of, you know, talk tough and. But the problem is that you insult him, you insult all his supporters, which are at least, you know, half the Republican Party, the MAGAs. And they're like, fuck this guy. I'll never vote for him. So maybe you'll slam him, but you'll lose all those votes. So you can't beat this. Not in the general. That's another thing. But in the primaries, no fucking way. He will be the nominee. That's why DeSantis is taking forever. He's probably thinking, man, maybe I shouldn't do this.
I mean, it's so funny too, like in American culture and the American landscape, and everyone's like, I can't believe this. Like, we're going to do it again. Like, the same two guys, just like a sequel over and over. And it's like, look at American entertainment. It's all just the same. No one can handle anything at all different. It's like the consumption has to be just like, here, this again. Here, okay, now Fast and the Furious 15. Oh, okay, all right. People are like, man, this is amazing. Marvel and all that shit. It's just the same shit. So people, that's why I think it's funny, like, with politics, like, what's going on? Why are we just doing the same thing? It's like, because that's all anyone can handle. That's all, like, that's what people want.
And people, I had this conversation the other day with a couple comics they're both old. And I'm like, yeah, because that's who wants to be president now. Because when you're young, you have a life ahead of you, and you run for president, they're going to tear you apart. Your whole life is, you know, but when you're old, you don't give a fuck. What do you care? I got 10 more years to live. Fuck it. I don't give a shit. So like when they used to say Oprah or The Rock were running, I'm like, they're not running, because everyone loves both of them. The second they run for president, 45% of the country will hate their guts immediately.
Yeah. Immediately.
You know, they're Democrats. 45% fucking hate you forever.
Especially now. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but when you're old, you don't give a fuck anymore, you know?
Well, Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to. I guess now, that is what it is.
And when you're young, and you know, especially now, it's like, you know, especially when you're older, that people all kind of know all your skeletons. I mean, even though they're discovering new ones with Trump every day, they knew all the shit about him.
And yeah,
but it was all old news. So
the other thing I loved, I was watching CNN afterwards, like they were doing that thing. I turned the channel. I was like, when they're like, we're going to talk to some undecided voter. So I was like, oh my God, undecided. Yeah. What are you talking about? Like, right. What, how could you be undecided in the, from the last 7 years?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't. It's just sort of.
Yeah, and it's
one
like,
thing if you're like if you're. Well, go ahead.
No, we were talking about it last week. Like, yeah, I voted for Trump last time, but he raped my mom. So,
I'm still leaning
to Trump.
Yeah, I just like his policies. When does it go from like you like his policies to just you're also a Nazi? You're like supporting a Nazi. Yeah. When does that inflection point happen? Because it had, because it's getting to that. I mean, I guess slowly, where it's like, one thing I thought that was good about Succession doing that though, and I think that's what pop culture's job is going to have to be in the next 10 years or whatever, is because there's a lot of Succession fans. It's a hit show, and a lot of them are just kind of, you know, would be middle America Trump's people who are like Trump voters or whatever.
Right.
And how I thought it was interesting how they just kind of slipped all that in basically into the narrative, basically like, oh, Fox News was total propaganda and they made a decision to support this demagogue that none of them really like, they knew would ruin the country, and they did it for selfish corporate reasons just to line their pockets. And,
I'll watch but that episode.
Even though I think if you're in that camp, you're so far gone, you wouldn't even pick up on it. But yeah. I feel like that's the only way is putting it into like mainstream popular pop culture.
I don't think Republicans really watch that show, to be honest. Not MAGA people. So they're not going to get offended.
Yeah, you're right. But maybe like moderates, maybe like people who aren't MAGA, maybe. Yeah. And it might because the show is popular and it's smart and it's like a kind of a cool hip show. And I think it might make some people be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I don't like these people. Like, it's not like it's got to become cool or hip again to like not like Nazis, basically, which is like it's not right now.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah.
I almost feel like I can't say anything. If I say something like against Nazis, not it's like people will get mad at me.
Yeah. Well, that's a scary thing. It's like years ago when you said, you know, if you said global warming was fake, people would think you're a maniac. Now it's like you can offend people by saying global warming is real. I mean, come on. This is fucking science. I want to do one last story, then I got to bump out of here. It was a story this week. Richard Dreyfuss, who is a Trump hater, he's liberal. The Oscars are making these new rules, I guess, to qualify for Oscars, that a certain percentage of the people who work on the movie have to be diverse, right? It doesn't have
to
be
just hire minorities.
It doesn't have to be just the actors. It could be crew and stuff like that. And, this is what Richard Dreyfuss, if you want to hear what he thinks about that.
Okay.
While I'm on this show, but just.
A sec. Sorry. I didn't get it to the beginning of it.
And no one should be telling me as an artist that I have to give in to the latest, most current idea of what morality is. And what are we risking? Are we really risking hurting people's feelings?
All right. Well, that was kind of he goes a little more off on that. But
what is he? Is he just basically saying, like, why does art have to be guided and shaped by certain guardrails or guidelines?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I, you know, and I think this stuff is important. The one thing that I feel a little when they do like an old movie, a movie about an old thing, where it was just clearly all white people were involved. And then sometimes you start seeing them do these movies now and they're including like black people, which I think is good.
Yeah.
But for the actors, but that's not really, you know, it's like doing the royal family in 1800. All of a sudden there's like a black king. I guess that's what Bridgerton is like that. So it's almost like revisionist history. You know, it's kind of a tough subject, but I'm like, well, maybe
it's kind of like that all white Malcolm X that's coming out. Directed
so,
by Soros. I don't even know what.
But the one thing I was wondering is about, this is just for Oscar movies that want to win Oscars. But like, if you don't care about the Oscar, then what's the, you know, the funny thing is like Tyler Perry will never win an Oscar and his things are so diverse. I don't think.
Well, maybe he'll be the only one that's that qualifies to be nominated. When that, remember? Did that rule just get made or passed or something?
They passed it like last year and stuff. You know, when it was Oscars. So,
so if your movie has to, do you know what the percentage has to be? What is it? It has to be like 2% or something.
I don't know. It's a good amount.
Do you think that's why, like, I mean, not that, but like Everything Everywhere All at Once, do you think that was that a big, like, celebrating like diversity? And
yeah, and it was also, you know, I think I didn't love that movie. That was okay, but it was also like this, they're so international now.
Right.
Our movies,
I just rewatched it. I just rewatched it. I don't think it's good. I think that's going to be that's going to age really poorly. I think that's going to be people like, this sucks.
I'm reading it right now. The studio film must have, all right, multiple, more than one in-house senior executives belonging to two unrepresented groups on their creative and development, marketing, publicity. So you could basically shove a lot of people in these, you know, not acting roles in the movie. You just say, hey, this is the marketing
that's what
guy.
Gonna do. They're going to find a way around it.
All right. Do you want to hear the groups, though? Is women, a racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ+, people with physical disabilities, African-American, East Asian, Hispanic, Indigenous, Middle Eastern, Pacific Islander, South
Asian. So they have to hire all of these or a percentage of?
I think it's just. It's a little vague.
It's probably like a procedure. You have to have a certain percentage of,
you know, this reminds me once group. There's this old All in the Family that was so funny. Their Archie's Lodge got in trouble because they didn't have any minorities and stuff. So they get in trouble. So they want to find one member, token member, who can, get everyone off the heat off their lodge. So they find a black guy who's also Jewish. So they like cover all their bases.
Right.
I feel like they're going to find someone who's like a Jewish, deaf, Asian, and they're like, oh, I see. That's like four of them right there.
A deaf, Jewish, black, trans. They're going to find one person that's LGBTQ, whatever.
You know, they're going to do things to work around that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It's also, speaking of that, so the writer's strike, I don't know if you've been following that at all. We did talk about that before. I forgot. It sounds like that's really going to be have a lasting. It's going to go on through the fall, and I think I'm kind of curious what they're actually going to. I didn't realize. I knew things had changed. I didn't realize one thing that someone says, like, because I mean I was aware of it, but like TV, that whole template, you know, it's still there, but like. Like a hit TV show that's on for like 25 to 30 episodes a season and is like keeps going for a long time. Yeah, that's gone, I guess. So a lot of these writers now are just on shows that have like six episodes and then it's like, we're done after this season. You know, I've been noticing that too. That I feel like the series are ending a lot faster now. Do you know what I mean?
And just because you write on one show doesn't mean you still have to submit and, you know, whatever. So back in the day, you got a writing job on a network sitcom that was like, you know, a hit, you were made in the shade, you know?
But doesn't it feel a little bit too of like, because one thing I keep hearing these, you know, writers say in interviews, like, you know, this has become like a middle-class profession. And it's kind of like they're complaining about, they kind of had it made in the shade. And then it's kind of like, well now it's like a thing where like, we're not making as much as money anymore. And like, my life's just kind of normal, you know? And it's like, well, I mean, cry me a fucking river. Like, I'm sorry, you had a good front and things changed. Like,
It does. But the more important thing is that that union is a very strong union, and they're trying to break the back of one. There's not a very many strong unions in this country, and they're going to try to break the back of them. So,
and it is representative of a lot of where our economy is going, just at a lot of professions where they're kind of doing that, where they've turned it into like a gig economy, where it's basically like, yeah, we don't really have to give you anything. We'll just kind of like, you just get a bunch of different jobs to make a living. And I get it. But like I said, it's sort of like, I can see it happening with, you know, like I remember like as a comedian, you'd know somebody would maybe get like a cool writing job. And in your 20s, you're probably not getting that much money, but it's like a huge break and it's like a cachet. And then you're like, but then I think now what's happening is things change. And now these people are like in their 40s and have mortgages and kids. And they're like, okay, it's not just cool that I write for a TV show. Like I don't have any money. You know what I mean? Like, and I get it. But at the same time, it's like, a lot of people go through things like that. So I've known
some comics,
high profile.
I've known some comics who've gotten some really good writing jobs in their 20s. And, you know, a lot of these jobs are grinds and they want to be comics and, you know, and they would just leave. And I, for a long time, I was like, that's a dumb move. But now I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, if you're a successful comic, you'll always work. You may not be rich.
Yes. I guess now the whole market has changed.
Yeah,
now,
social media and everything.
It's a lot harder.
There's no writers on social media. There's comics. You know?
And at the end of the day, even if you had one of these great jobs, you know, that town's littered with people who used to have great jobs and careers and it's just kind of don't have it anymore. And I think it's kind of like professional, you know, like sports. Where, you know, they'll sign a big deal really young and they're like, oh, shit, I'm going to make $10 million for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? It's like, no, there's even though in writing you can keep doing it, it's like they are always, you know, churning out. They want like the next young voices and stuff. So like you can have a great job, but it isn't necessarily going to last. And that must be terrifying because a lot of these people used to write for shows that would go on for 10 years. And they were definitely locked in.
And I know the residual money has changed with streaming. So, you know, it used to be you could live off residuals and now I don't think you can really. So
I don't think they even have them really anymore with the streaming. That's fucking crazy.
But I mean, it's as much as you're jealous and I am of these people, it's like you don't want them. They use that to break unions back. You know, any union, they're like, oh, look at how much this guy's getting paid. And then other people are like, yeah, fuck that union, you know? I know.
It's not even like I'm jealous. I'm just kind of like, I mean, I'm sure it was rooted in that at one point, but my point is like, I think I just had a couple of triggering things where I saw, like heard interviews or saw with people that like I've known over the years who kind of like, you know, didn't treat me in a way, you know, the way I would have liked to have been treated. And so, watching that, you know, someone who did a complaint about their life not being great right now is sort of like, well, sorry, but you know, you shouldn't have been mean to me.
And you feel also,
I'm very mature.
Yeah. Well, some people have good writing.
Mean to me. What?
Some of the people have good writing jobs that this doesn't really apply to, and they have to strike. So, you know, those.
I know.
That's how they.
I know a lot of writers. We know a lot of writers too that I like a lot, and had great. Right, I'm only talking about like three people.
Yeah, but, fuck them.
But it's just funny because they're always the first ones to start complaining. They're the first ones to brag about it, and then the first ones to complain about it all over social media. You know what I mean? Where it's, this is bullshit. Come on, I'm middle class, and I'm like, welcome to my world, pal.
Yeah, it is, in fairness, you're still middle class. You know, if you work as a dishwasher and you lose your job, you're fucking destitute. So.
No, and I get it. I know the thing is because they're making a lot of money, the industry, and they're not giving it to any of them. But it's also like when it comes down to a lot of them are just cut, you know, it's very hard to find, you know, get sympathy. And I think they're unaware of the optics of it when they're just these people who are like, you know, I'm like middle class now. People are like, yeah, well, I don't have any money. So,
well, that's what you see on some of these shows. There'll be a writer who is doing well on a pretty good show and they leave because they get an opportunity to create their own show, even though it's a big risk because the show could be canceled or never be made. A lot of them do that because they know that the only real money to be made is being the guy, the creator, you know, the Ryan Murphy or the one who does.
Right. And I guess that's what the problem is, because it's like their argument is like, well, what do you mean? A lot of these people are thriving. And it's like, yeah, it's like three people. Like three people are doing amazing and everyone else is making like $50 an hour. But it's, yeah, I get it. You know, the other thing, the one thing about this thing is like, they're kind of like, well, they're going to see like that they need us. And but part of me almost liked the writer's strike because I was like, you know, I think I need to catch up with TV because, you know, like TV and movies, it's like there's so much now. Right. I'm like, you know, people are like, have you watched this? I'm like, I don't have time for that. I got like three other shows I need to watch. And then like I used to rewatch movies. I used to be into being like, I'd be like, wow, I like that movie. I'm going to watch it again. I don't do that anymore because I'm like, I don't. Like, I'll be like, I really like that. And I'm like, I don't have time for that anymore. That needs to get, I got that out of my life.
I think why the studios know they have the upper hand because they're the people are going to start discovering shows they never saw before, like they did during COVID. And, you know, I've heard that the HBO, I think I might have brought this up last week, is in the best position because apparently they make shows years out. So they have 2 years of new shows like all ready to go.
Yeah.
So they can slide right through.
Believe me, I've already like this week, I've already found like four new shows. But like, but you know, it's so oversaturated. Like the Pete Davidson show came out like a week and a half ago, which I gotta say is really fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I went into that like not wanting to like it or thinking, and I thought it was really, really funny. But I thought it was great, but it's sort of like, I'm already past it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and I thought it was really great. And I'm already like, all right, what's next? You know what I mean? But that's the culture we're in now. Like, and I was going to rewatch an episode, but in my mind, I was like, I don't have time to rewatch this.
Yeah. And then you have the other aspect that I think I might have brought up last week is that it's an American writer strike. Now, you know who's been making a lot of content, good quality content in the last 10 years, really stepping up is England.
Korea.
Yeah. And Korea too. But like, yeah, actually Korea, but England especially.
England, I feel like all these like the movie jobs and TV acting jobs are all being outsourced to like to foreigners, to English and Korean, just so many big actors who were nominated for Oscars. I mean, the last couple of years they were all not from America.
Well, I know this, and this is my theory on it, is like I said, movies are very international, right? And English actors are very good. They have a very classical training, and they know where the money is to be made is you have to learn an American accent, and they're all really pretty good at it. And I think they look at them first in a way, because even if it's an American movie, if they have one English guy who speaks in an American accent, he's still a name in like England and probably a lot of Europe too. So like, all right, we'll have this one guy in here. Like I think Simon Pegg, they threw him in those Mission Impossible movies. I think he talks with an American accent in those movies. And he's like well, let's just use him as an example. He's a marginal star here. He's very big in England. He's very big probably in other places in Europe. So the Mission Impossible movies are already popular, but now, you got the monster star. Now everyone in England is going to go see it. They probably want to see him more than Tom Cruise in a way.
Yeah.
So that's casting decisions are made that way. I
guess you're right. Yeah. Cause I think it was two Oscars ago. Every actor who won was not American.
That's why English people are really good at American accents. Americans aren't so great at English ones, because English people know if they want to make money, they have to. I'm watching that show Yellow Jackets. I'm reading about all the actors. Everyone's fucking Australian or New Zealand. They speak American English better than I do. I'm like,
I know. It's really funny because a lot of times I've heard interviews with actors who like that I've seen in things for years, and then like, hello, yes, I'm like, wait, you're like the guy from Get Out.
Yeah, he's British.
I was like, you're fucking British.
All right, we should wrap it up.
We should wrap it up. Okay, cool. All right, everyone, thanks for tuning in. Join our Patreon for bonus material and behind the scenes footage.
What's that?
I don't know. They'll have to find out by paying.
Is it your bathroom?
Pretty much.
No, you should. It's good stuff.
Some footage of me sleeping. turning on my computer. All right. And we'll see you next time. Thanks.
All right. Bye.